Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio.
And that is, of course, Milton, Florida. I failed to mention that for some reason when I made the introduction to the show. And I probably should say it more often or make a new one. I don't know. I mean, I kind of like to stick with the classics. Once I've done something, it seems kind of silly to try and do it again. But, you know, that's kind of how it works. Anyway, we've got a ton of things going on today. Yesterday was fascinating. I'm not quite sure what happened with the audio quality of the show. There's a lot of missing words. I'm trying a new experiment here. I've sort of knocked my, I get the gain, the strength of my signal back a little bit, hoping to get a higher quality for you. This whole purpose of using a microphone is so you get the words clearly. And I think what happened was that maybe it was still a little stronger. I got a little enthusiastic. But anyway, a lot of key words are cut out. So if you find me repeating things, several times, that's why I do it. It's just to make sure that it does get to you. So I'm still playing with things, still adjusting. There's always something to do here in terms of the technical stuff. As far as what happened yesterday was a fascinating show. It's one of those groundbreaking shows where we sort of, you know, go forward where, you know, it's like the old Star Trek thing, you know, boldly going forward where nobody seems to have gone before. And what I found interesting was the liberal timeline that I found to the coronavirus, how openly they were talking about this Obama playbook, how openly they talked about the Obama transition team and the Trump transition team working in such glorious harmony together, kumbaya, let's have a hug, you know, a week before Trump is inaugurated. And then this playbook is given to the Trump team, which they, you know, the Obama knew Trump wouldn't use it. You know, of course not, because why would you take a book from the previous administration, especially as diametrically opposed as one that hates America as much as Obama and crew do? You know, why would Trump, who loves America, you know, who wants to put America first instead of America in the dirt, you know, like the Biden, Obama, and all the other America haters out there want to do, why would you take a playbook from that person? Well, you wouldn't. Okay. So obviously Obama had something else in mind, because remember, Obama's not stupid. Like I say, you know, he hates this country. He wants to bring it down like, you know, Soros and Hillary and all the other globalists do, but they're not stupid. Okay. So the only reason I could think of that he would want to give Obama a playbook was for somebody else. And that somebody else was Dr. Anthony Fascist, Dr. Anthony Fauci. Now, it's interesting how everybody's ganging up on him and they want him kicked out of his job and all that kind of stuff. Well, there's an article I'm going to get to here in a little bit from one of my favorite state representatives who's also running for Congress, and that's Representative Anthony Sabatini. And we're trying to get him on the show. He's been on a couple times before, but we've never really had a chance, you know, for a full hour to kind of go over the issues. He's got a Newsweek appearance, Newsmax appearance Sunday. And it's on his Facebook page. You can go take a look at that. And so I'm really curious to see. He's going to talk about limited government and things like that. What I wish he'd talk about is our legislation. But you know, wouldn't that be nice? You know, because that would break our story wide open, and that would completely change the political debate. So I'm going to see if I can convince Representative Sabatini to maybe possibly, you know, it's a long shot. I mean, I have my dreams, okay? But that would someday some politician, some candidate for office, some legislator is going to actually use citizen legislation as either a part of or a major part of their political campaign. It's going to happen. It's just a question of who's the first person to do it. And so, like I say, Anthony Sabatini would be a great person too to do that. He is such a groundbreaker himself. He was the one that was out front of the mask mandates, you know, in abolishing them and fighting for people's constitutional rights, of saying very clearly that you don't lose your constitutional rights in a pandemic or because of public health bureaucrats. The whole beauty of the Constitution is that the bureaucrats can never take it away unless you let them. And so what happened was that people let them. People let the bureaucrats, you know, and the governors and the mayors take away their constitutional rights by complying with unconstitutional orders. See, we were under no obligation to do that. Now, the problem was the few that resisted were arrested, which served as examples for the rest of the people not to do it. But what you really need is what you need is mass noncompliance. You know, mass noncompliance with mask mandates would have stopped them. If nobody's wearing a mask, we're all saying screw you. Then it would have happened, of course. But people didn't have the correct information. If they demanded hydroxychloroquine, if they demanded a cure to COVID instead of these stupid vaccines that come along after the disease is basically gone, you know, then we'd be in a lot better shape. But that's not what happened. Anyway, so yesterday I found this playbook. I found the summit that the transition exercise they had that Obama was doing. And this, I don't even think this made the news because I don't remember it at all. And I've got a pretty decent memory. Okay. And so to not have any of this, you know, register in my brain as having even been a story means it probably wasn't covered that well. And I don't think anybody else can remember it either. It's not just me. You know, like I said, I got a pretty good memory. You know, so there's a lot of stuff that that sits in my brain all the time. That's how I bring these things back up to you. All right. So it's, I don't know. It's what's where this is going to go. But we've opened up a new rabbit hole, as they say. We've opened up a new pathway. We've opened up a new connection. We've got Dr. Fascist already connected with Mark Zuckerberg at Facebook. Okay, that's pretty well established. So that's out there. What has not been established is whether Obama, Dr. Fascist, and Zuckerberg, the propaganda minister, are all connected, or all three are connected. It wouldn't surprise me. I just haven't found that connection yet. Okay, so I'll tell you what I speculate, and I'll tell you what I think, and then I'll tell you what I can show you. Okay, so that's what I think. That's what I'm speculating, but I can't show you yet. I mean, there's no convincing, clear, you know, document that's saying anything of the kind, but you never know. Okay, so we'll keep pursuing that, and then of course I want to pursue different other avenues like Hillary. Okay, because we all know Dr. Fascist was madly in love with Hillary and all everything she did. Okay, I mean, I've seen the emails. All right, so Hillary seems conspicuously absent from this entire COVID affair, which strikes me as odd. Someone that craves attention and power as much as she does would only be satisfied if she still had her power and attention, you know, from either her crowd or behind the scenes. And so, you know, it's like, where's Hillary? Okay. So when she's not selling the country out, when she's not getting rid of our uranium, when she's not, you know, causing, you know, people to lose their lives in Benghazi, when she's not destroying our foreign policy, you know, when she's not screwing around their domestic policy, you know, what is she doing? So we always have to keep track of, you know, the people that that wish our country evil. All right. So, which brings us to today's event, what I'm calling the Abbott and Costello Comedy Summit with Vladimir Putin and Joe Biden. I should get around. Let me do this properly. Let's get a round of applause. And that, wait a minute. Hang on. Let's. Well, first of all, we need something to announce this. So let's announce it. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the Abbott and Costello Comedy Summit with Vladimir Putin and Joe Biden. Okay, that's more like it. All right, and so why are they doing this? What possible good can come out of this? Well, none for us. You know, you've got Mr. Milktoast. You know, I don't know where I am. We were speculating yesterday. This is kind of amusing to bring up again. Josie was cracking up when I said this, but you know, Biden's absenteeism. So when he and Jill are having marital relations, if they do, you know, does Joe know who he's with? I mean, whose name is he calling out? Okay, I think it's just as funny today as it was yesterday. But these are the kind of things you wonder about, all right? I mean, it's guy things. Maybe we guys wonder about that kind of stuff just because we're guys. You know, you think about this, it's like, what the hell's going on out there? Nobody really knows. I mean, why would they do a summit? You know, Putin is infinitely smarter, stronger, more coherent, more with it, more aware, more conscious than Mr. I should be on a rocking chair, you know, sipping iced tea and watching the sunsets. Okay. So, I mean, that's where Joe belongs. It's interesting that the Democrats, you know, for all their claims of everybody else being racist, are the biggest racists out there. I was watching a report on One American News last night where Democrats feel that they have to, that they needed a white face out there. You know, they couldn't just run Kamala Harris as president, and you couldn't have Susan Rice, who's pretty much running the White House now, from what I heard from another report. You know, you can't have her out there. You know, you need the white guy to sort of, you know, keep the white people calm. All right, this is a bunch of crap. I mean, we don't care. You know, trust me. I mean, for all the conservatives that supported Herman Cain and Alan West and black conservatives all over this country, you know, white conservatives don't care because we never consider ourselves white. You know, I mean, we consider ourselves conservatives and Americans. You know, and that's the difference between the left and Americans. You know, the left sees themselves as part of their group because they don't have a country. They certainly don't have this country. They have their group, okay? And their group could be a skin color group or it can be a political ideology group, but it's certainly not, you know, Americans. Whereas conservatives, and independents and libertarians, we consider ourselves Americans first. Okay, it doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter where you're from. It doesn't matter, you know, as long as your priority is America first. If your priority is America first, and if you consider yourself American first, I don't give a damn who you are. It doesn't matter to us. And this is something the left doesn't understand. Okay, this is why they're not going to win, but they're going to cause a lot of damage in the process. And this is where we can defeat them. So don't, you know, never, when someone says you're a racist, you say, well, I'm not part of a race. And then they look at you like, huh? Yes, you are. This is your group. Well, that's your opinion, pal. You know, I don't feel part of a particular group. I don't walk around going, hey, I'm white. Isn't this cool? I'm a white guy. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I am, but so what? I don't think about it. I never think about it until it's brought up and kind of thrown in my face. So if you don't want to be part of a group, don't. In fact, that'd be an interesting thing for conservatives to kind of think to themselves, okay, you know, just stop being part of a group. You know, say, well, yeah, you know, this is your skin color. This is who you are. A, I disagree. And B, you know, I'm not part of any group. I'm an American, you know, so, and just kind of go from there. It might be interesting to see what's going on. All right. So this comedy summit, that's what I'm calling it. For those that are too young to know the reference, and they were mostly before my time, although I saw reruns when I was a kid and watched them for years, Abbott and Costello. We're a comedy team. And the reason I picked them as opposed to Laurel and Hardy and some of the other great comedy teams out there is because you had Abbott was the straight guy. He was the one that knew everything. He was the one that was going on. And then you had Costello was the bumbly one. I mean, he was always screwing up. He was always causing trouble. He never did anything right. And he was the fall guy. He was the jester. He was the joker, you know, and Costello was the smart, the brains of the two. So basically you've got Putin playing the part of Abbott and you got Biden playing the part of Costello. And what's interesting is that to be that bumbler, you know, Lou Costello was a genius. I mean, he was a comic genius. I've seen him interviewed. You know, you look at his stuff back when. So this is nothing against Lou Costello. It's against Joe Biden, okay, who has no business being where he is. He doesn't know where he is. And so, you know, between Jill Biden, Susan Rice, and a couple of other folks, a couple of other women, basically, from what I've heard, running, you know, the show there for Obama, you know, who's in the background, you know, just directing all this stuff like a stage play. It's very interesting to see. So nothing good is going to come out of this. There isn't a single thing that Biden could do with Putin that's going to make things better for us, for Americans. He's already given away, you know, he's basically sanctioned the Russian pipeline and destroyed our own. You know, he's destroyed our energy and he's boosting Russian energy. You know, he's destroying our military and everybody else is, you know, the throwing bombs at each other. You know, it's just, it never ends. I mean, you know, if the Republicans want a talking point, you know, if the geldings in the Republican Party ever, you know, started getting serious and got out there and actually started talking, the first thing that they say every single day is that everything Biden is doing is wrong. Everything the Democrats are doing is wrong. I mean, there's your talking point, you geldings. Get up and say that. They should start every press conference every day. First of all, they should have a press conference every day. And here's the news. Here's the news according to the Republican Party. Here's the news. And the news is that the Democrats are doing everything wrong. And just go from there. You know, and if you say that often enough, say it every day, you know, when you meet a Democrat, say, oh, you guys are doing everything wrong. You know, instill it in their mind. You know, this is how the big lie works. This is not a lie. It's the truth. But if you want to get this into – but the psychology is the same, okay? So whether it's the big lie or the big truth, it doesn't matter. The psychology is the same. Repeat it over and over again like a mantra. Democrats. And once again today, it'd be a great newscast. You know, once again today, the Democrats are doing everything wrong, okay? You know, so – and that's pretty much where we stand. All right. I've got – Wednesdays have become a very fluid show because I used to have two reporters, and then we kind of go into like a guest. And I've got guests, you know, in the pipeline, I've got guests coming, but really it's just me. And so this is probably the best chance to just, you know, hop on the phone and call in and talk about pretty much anything. But I do have a series of articles. I've got enough material for, you know, six shows right now sitting at the bottom of my computer here. And the two reports, the timing is not really specific. It sort of depends on my mood and where we're going to go, because most of the show is improvised anyway. And so we've got the vaccine report, or as I used to call it, the not ready for Facebook vaccine report, because everything in it would get me censored. Everything in it would get me 3-day suspension. So I'm looking at least, let's see, I've got six articles, six, three, easy. So we're talking about 6 months. You know, my report today would get me, because they wouldn't do it concurrently, they do it consecutively, right? So they take each post that I made. This is what Facebook does, right? And so if they want to give you more violations, they don't say, you made all these posts on this day, you know, well, we're going to give you a 30-day suspension. No, they give you, if you made six posts they don't like, they'll give you suspension on the first one. Wait about till about, you know, 27 days into your suspension. Say, oh, on this day, you made a post that goes against our community standards. Another 30 days. So then you got 30 days on top, you know, of your previous 30 day. And they can do the, they'll daisy chain them all the way out until you're done, until they're done, right? That's how I got a 90-day suspension on one post, because I shared it three times. And as the first 30 day was ending, you know, they'd say, oh, guess what we found? You know, sorry, you violated the standards. And they give me another 30-day suspension. Okay, so it's really terrible. Anyway, I've got a ton of news for you, so let's get to the newsroom and let's see what's Now, let's see what's coming off the teletype today. So I've got a bunch of stories here. I've got two main things. I don't think where am I going to start today. I want to start with Okay, let's start with this one. Is it the vaccine report? Do I want to do that one yet? Yeah, it's a vaccine report. We'll do the vaccine report next. Yeah, so I'm moving things around my computer. Don't mind me, okay? I do this a lot, okay? It's just, you know, we're working on stuff. All right, so let's start with an incredible article that sort of applies to what's going on. This is more the foreign policy stuff. So normally at this time, the election correction report is everything to do with the audits, to do with, you know, the finding all the fraud in the elector in the election of 2020 and correcting it so that the rightful winner, Donald Trump, gets back in office. That's normally what I report on at this time. And I'll get to those stories too. But because we've got so much going on in Europe with the G7 and with the, you know, with the Biden-Putin comedy hour coming up, that I thought it'd be interesting to sort of digress a little bit and take some of these, you know, some of the other stories into account. And the one that I found the best one is in American Greatness. You know, I'm getting all these new sources. It's really fun. So, you know, some of them I find on One American News. Some of them I find by luck. Some of them you folks are supplying to me. But there's a lot of really good sources out there. So American Greatness is one of those great new sources. And this is Daniel Gellertner, G-E-L-E-R-N-T-E-R, June 15th, yesterday. He says, no leaders attended the G7 summit. The meeting last week in the UK is just a reminder of what happens when we allow actors to take the place of leaders. He says, when I was a child, I made the mistake, as many children do, of thinking that the actors I saw in movies were in some way responsible for their lines. As the playwright Moss Hart heard from a lady sitting behind him, actors say the cleverest things. But it didn't take me long to notice that while an actor can make good material great, he cannot make bad material good. If you give him stupid and implausible things to say, you know where we're going with this, right? Okay. If you give him stupid and implausible things to say, he will look stupid and implausible. He may or may not be aware of how he looks. That's not his job. His job is to act the way someone tells him to act and to say what someone tells him to say. And that brings us to the picture of the G7 leaders on the beach in Cornwall. Nobody who watches the film of these people arriving, coming down the boardwalk, carefully spaced, hygienically elbow bumping in lieu of shaking hands, and finally taking up positions for the photo op, nobody would believe these people are world leaders. Because they aren't. They aren't running the Western world. They are run by the people who really run, really are running the Western world, people whose names we don't know. Well, I think we know some of them. Okay, you know, we've talked about these folks before, all right? You know, and of course, we get called conspiracy theorists. Whenever someone says that, they get all nasal on you. Yeah, you're a conspiracy theorist. Yeah, I sound like Bugs Bunny, right? Yeah, what's that, Doc? You know, so it's funny when something, you're a conspiracy theorist. Like that's somehow an insult. You know, a conspiracy when two or more people are plotting evil towards you, and a theory that it exists, but we can't prove it yet, but we're working on it. You know, that's a bad thing. That's a good thing. So anyway, I digress. Anyway, so our author says the people on the beach in Cornwall are there simply in recognition of the working men's need to see an elected head of state. They are actors. Next paragraph. A Rasmussen poll in March found that just 47% of Americans believe Biden is actually doing the job of president. I'm surprised it's that high. At least as many people believe the job is being done by some other person or persons behind the scenes. And that 47% who believe Biden is doing the job must think it's an easy one, since you don't have to remember where you are or with whom you are speaking. I think I addressed that earlier with the Jill Biden segment. I'm having fun with that. Even as an actor, Biden's powers are failing. It's hardly more plausible that Boris Johnson, a man who looks and talks like a buttered scone, is actually determining policy in Britain. Okay, they call them scones in Britain. You people call them scones because you don't know. Okay, but trust me, in the British Commonwealth countries, they're scones. Don't mind me. I'm digressing again. Back to the article. Remember his great pandemic speech. I must give the British people a very simple instruction. You must stay home. If you don't follow the rules, the police will have the power to enforce them. That would have, I love this line here. That would have stuck in the throat of any real leader of any real democracy or republic. Okay, we're not a democracy, folks. How many times do I have to say that? All right. Churchill would be vomiting in his grave, but Boris Johnson's eyes were burning with earnestness as he relayed the instructions given to him by the civil service bureaucracy and whatever other hidden powers are running his mouth. Okay. So as it was explained to me by Patrick Wood, who runs a magazine called Technocracy, who documents the technocrats, basically technical bureaucrats that run, you know, every country. The one most prominent that we all know is Dr. Fascist. Okay. Dr. Fascist is a technocrat. You know, he may have a medical degree, but his real skill is in pushing papers, pushing grants, and advancing a particular agenda for big pharma. You know, he's their boy, even though he's 80 years old. All right. So his job is to market vaccines at all costs. And I do mean all costs. In fact, at the cost of hundreds of thousands of lives. I mean, that's his job. Okay. So he is, as I've said before, as we went over very carefully yesterday, a genocidal, psychopathic drug pusher. That's who Anthony Fascist is. All right. And so, but he has a lot of power. He's the one that basically, I'm sure he's the one that created the coronavirus task force. I don't think it was Trump. And the purpose of that task force was to keep Trump out of it so they could do what they wanted, to lock down, to mask, to run the little dictatorships in the states. And even DeSantis fell for that for a while, our governor here in Florida. All right. That was his job. And his job was basically to run President Trump. Which is really sad that Trump let it happen. I mean, that's his biggest failing. That's his biggest mistake. That's what I'll remember him for as the worst possible thing he could have done compared to all the good things he did the first 3 years, okay, despite the fact that all the investigations and everything else. Okay, so let's go back to the article. So we got Boris Johnson being run by his, you know, his civil service bureaucracy. Justin Trudeau, Canada. Ooh, Canada, eh? Great way north. Justin Trudeau, meanwhile, seemed genuinely hurt when nobody liked his little, you know, Bhangra dance routine back in Delhi in 2018. I never saw that. You guys, I didn't miss anything. I miss him in blackface too, but that's another story. Back to the article. It's not entirely his fault. He was in Indian costume and he slipped into the role. He forgot for a moment that his full-time job was pretending to be prime minister. So he's in blackface. Now he's Indian too. Didn't we used to call that cultural appropriation? Yeah. All right. Back to the article. You could replace Biden with any Hollywood actor, George Clooney, Tom Hanks, Denzel Washington, Meryl Streep. And now playing Joe Biden, Meryl Streep. That would be funny. That would be hysterical. Okay, back to the article. And it wouldn't make the slightest difference in how the country is being run or what policies are pursued. You could replace Biden with a paper cup. That might destroy the illusion, though not by much. Biden is a figurehead, rather more embarrassing than the Queen of England and rather less powerful. Yeah. Put Biden's face in a paper cup. Let's put him on the podium and just have like a voice speaking. Yeah, what's the difference, right? Anyway, article says this evolving disassociation, but they spelled it badly, of leaders from leadership should worry us. Who is really deciding how to spend our taxes? Who is deciding to give infrastructure access to China, to cancel Keystone XL and American energy independence, to cashier military officers who won't recite the woke pledge, to teach our children to hate their own skin? Who is running the country? Returning to the question of the pandemic, a phenomenon so far reaching that it still affects how the head of state actors behave in public. Of course, they will shake hands and pat each other on the back when they're off stage. You know, ask yourself which companies and which countries have benefited the most from this global catastrophe. Well, I think we've covered that pretty adequately. We've been covering that the whole idea of who's benefiting, you know, for over a year now. And so I think, you know, if you're a regular listener to Action Radio, call me and I'll tell you. 215-383-3832. Article says the companies that make billions while you stayed home may have been operating out of simple greed. But the countries involved want more than money, which is why they don't mind spending money to control political and cultural assets like news outlets and Hollywood production companies. Ask yourself this. Who are we most likely to fight against in the next war? There always is a next war. When we get there and when the fighting begins, who is going to be in charge at home running a cup. Will it be another Joe Biden paper cup presidency, or will it be too late even to matter? If this does worry you, the way to correct it is by taking the lowest rung of the corruption ladder, and that is not local Democrats but local Republicans. Weak and flaccid Republican politicians make Biden possible by cooperating with people who actively hate America. Let me say that again, because this is something, you know, quite profound. All right. The reason I call the GOP the gelding old party, gelding being a castrated male horse, well, obviously male, you know, the reason I call them the gelding old party is that's who they are. They're not doing anything. They made Biden possible. Mike Pence, on several occasions, made Biden possible. You know, Mitch McConnell in the Senate, by not continuing the evaluation and the challenge to the various electors coming from the various states to Congress after January 6th, made Biden possible. They all made Biden possible. The Republicans could have taken so many actions, which I've documented so many times, you know, to stop this, to do something about it, to support the audits, to walk out of Congress, to demand, you know, that reconciliation be tossed out as a policy, you know, because it's, by definition, the bills that the Democrats are passing under reconciliation, so they don't need a Republican vote, are not reconciliation bills. You know, and there's so many things that they could do. Take our citizen legislation, talk about that. You know, there's a lot of things that they could do that they're not. Take daily talking points. Go after the Democrats every day. Start the day with, here's what the Democrats did wrong today. Here's what Biden did wrong today. There are just an endless things that they could do, you know, if they listen to us here, you know, and a bunch of other folks, but they're not. Okay. So let me read that line again. If this does worry you, the way to correct it is by taking out the lowest rung of the corruption ladder. And that is not local Democrats, but local Republicans. Weak and flaccid Republican politicians make Biden possible by cooperating with people who actively hate America. Okay, so this is profound. This is why the election correction is so important. So in many ways, this is probably the most important report of the day today. Okay, because if you understand that the real problem with America is not the Democrats, well, it is. I mean, obviously, if we could abolish the Democrat Party, we'd cure, you know, like 99% of our problems in this country. I mean, it's just that simple. They cause them. Okay, but the real reason that the Democrats are able to do what they do is because of the Republicans, who don't do anything. You know, it's either Edmund Burke or John Stuart Mill have variations of the theme that all that's necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. Guess who's doing nothing? And they're going to ask for your vote and ask for money? You better off giving it to us here at Action Radio. You want to see some action? We'll show you what action looks like. You know, when we get a million listeners, you want to see what action looks like? I'll show you. I mean, we should. You have no idea what we've got planned, you know. But basically, you know, if we can inspire millions of Americans with the power to demand the laws that they want to be governed by, everything changes. Okay, we'll talk about that more later too. All right, so we've got weak and flaccid Republican politicians make Biden possible by cooperating with people who actively hate America. They cooperate out of a love of politics. They cooperate out of a desire to keep their jobs, even when their party is not in power. And some, no doubt, cooperate because they get paid to cooperate. Okay, so basically the Republican Party is, you know, the party with the handout, you know, to everybody else saying, oh, please, you know, like me, pay me, you know, I'll be good. I'll be the loyal opposition. I'll be the controlled opposition. I'll make big speeches, but won't do anything about it, you know. And again, I've said this before, even my favorite, my previous favorites, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, you know, some of the other folks, Josh Hawley, Joe Cotton, you know, some of these people who I thought were really good, you know, Marsha Blackburn, you know, some of the other senators in there, and a couple of Marjorie Taylor Greene in the House, and there's another woman who runs the restaurant Rifle Colorado. I forget her name. Anyway, so there's some really, really inspiring people I used to respect, but those, not so much the new folks, you know, that just got there, like the Marjorie Taylor Greens, but the people who've been there for a while, the Ted Cruz's and the Rand Pauls, you know, did not continue the challenge of January 6th. All right. They basically, as far as I'm concerned, that's where they sold out the country, you know, because what they should be saying is, wait a minute, we haven't finished our challenge. Yes, something happened on January 6th. We don't know what, because the Justice Department has 10,000 hours of surveillance tapes they're not releasing. So the Democrats are calling it an insurrection. The truth is, you know, a whole bunch of folks were in the Capitol. All right. But that's not the point. The point is that what the legislators were in the Capitol to do was to challenge each state's electors to see if they're actually valid. And of course, you know, a good part of them were not valid, but that wasn't allowed to go through. So basically you had your vote stolen, your rights stolen, you had your everything stolen. And then the excuse is, well, an insurrection at the Capitol. Well, okay, well, once that's over, then you get back to the business of doing what you're supposed to do, and you start back with the electoral challenge. Well, that never happened, okay? So the real problem with January 6th that people don't understand is not the fact that a bunch of people walked in somewhere at invitation. You know, some, I guess, you know, broke in, and a whole bunch of folks just walked through the open doors going, this is cool, you know. The real problem is that the challenge to the state's electors stopped, and that's why we have to go through all these audits, okay? So every day we're losing, you know, time for the winner of the election, Donald Trump, because the Republicans, you know, have not done anything to advance any of the audits at the federal level. You know, they're sitting around there twiddling their thumbs waiting for instructions from their handlers. That's what's going on here. All right. Back to the article. I've got like 12 articles. I'm 30 some odd minutes, 2 minutes into the show, and I'm still on the first one. I prepare a lot of stuff, but I just never get to all of it. Anyway. The article says, if you have Republicans representing you at the local and state level, know who they are and know how they acted after the 2020 election. Well, I think I just covered that. If they have been willing to go along with the sham, if they've urged you to unite and move on, they need to go. Gee, I wish I read that. this is exactly what I was talking about, right? They are America's weakest links and parts of our political system that make every other facet of corruption and fraud possible. I think I need to get this person on the show. All right, so here we go. See, so this is a tough thing to ask because most Americans do not like to spend their time in politics. They have other things to do. I don't, but that's just me. All right. He says they prefer building their own lives to bossing other people around. Well, that's what Democrats like to do. But we must force ourselves to get involved. Organize a campaign to recall every Republican who supported the election fraud, either by action or inaction. Primary every Republican who is beyond recall. Leave not a man standing, or a woman, who did not stand for America. The pandemic is just a taste of what's to come. The 2020 election was our wake-up call. And the G7 summit, that's just a reminder of what happens every day we allow actors to take the place of leaders. Daniel Gellerntner. G-E-L-E-R-N-T-E-R. Okay, this is an American greatness, and the date of this is, you know, yesterday, June 15th. Okay, so keep that one. Think about that. I'm going to play some stuff here and then get back in a little bit. We have a sponsor, and we have a wonderful sponsor now at Action Radio called Santa Rosa Volunteers. So I've got a couple of things that I made. So let me play you the intro to why I, you know, all about them, and then I've got something on Federalist 44. So we're going to take a few minutes to do this. And so sit back, enjoy yourself, and I will be back in just 5-6 minutes, something like that. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. I am proud to announce a new feature of Action Radio. Santa Rosa Volunteers has commissioned me to bring to you an education in our founding documents, one focused subject at a time. Each week, we will have a new presentation drawing from the Declaration of Independence, the Federalist Papers, the Constitution, and who knows, maybe back to Magna Carta. So enjoy learning about your God-given birthright in these vignettes. Share them with your children, your grandchildren, your parents, your friends, in fact, anyone you want to serve, an accessible yet poignant introduction to a lifelong journey in the study and practice of liberty. The whole purpose of these presentations is to inform a generation or two of Americans about the true meaning of our founding. They should have gotten that in school. Since that is not happening, Santa Rosa Volunteers has decided to help change that. If you want to learn more about Santa Rosa Volunteers and maybe get involved, their website is srv1776.com. srv1776.com. Their email is srv1776@protonmail.com. It is their goal to share local community information while encouraging everyone to feel welcomed and informed. Santa Rosa Volunteers says, "Arise, patriots! It is time to take our republic back. The sleeping giant awakens. Arise, patriots, and get involved." Until next time, this is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by the Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. A meme came to my attention last week that inspired this week's Founding Moments. It has Justice Scalia in the background, and it says, "The Dems are screwed. The state legislatures can decertify their election results. In all cases. The Federalist, number 44, and then it had a court case, Prince versus U.S., 1997. Federalist 44 was written by James Madison and published January 25, 1788. The title is Restrictions on the Authority of the Several States. This paper primarily deals with provisions in the Constitution that states used to do, which have now been delegated to the federal government in the Constitution. Where states got into trouble before the Constitution was the lack of uniformity in coining money, treaties, credit, ex post facto laws, duties, taxes, imports, exports, trade, and anything that was more confusing with many states all doing things differently. It was a mess. What has attracted all the attention to Federalist 44 these days is Section 3, where it says, "The election of the President and Senate will depend, in all cases, on the legislatures of the several states, and the election of the House of Representatives will equally depend on the same authority in the first instance and will, probably, forever be conducted by the officers and according to the laws of the states." This applies directly today to the 2020 state election audits, particularly in Arizona, and the future audits in Georgia, New Hampshire, the continued one in Michigan, and any of the other states currently visiting the Senate audit in Arizona. What is so interesting is that if the states have authority over elections to federal office, then the states have the ability to both certify elections and also decertify based on evidence of fraud. It's not being used as a phrase yet, but we should classify the state election audits as an ongoing investigation of the 2020 election, given that the occupants of the White House should not have the power to do anything until the ongoing investigation is complete, and any actions taken so far should be neutralized. Should the states determine that the audits reveal election fraud, they can decertify their mistake with Biden electors and replace them with legal and proper Trump electors. The federal government has no part in this, despite Attorney General Merrick Garland's partisan threat to throw lawful election auditors in jail, seize the ballots and voting machines, and pull a Stalinist-like purge of lawful state exercise of authority. We are in unexplored territory here, but if Federalist 44 is any guide, then the states have the complete power and responsibility over election of federal officials, be they president, senator, or representative, however long the ongoing investigations take to reach the true and correct election result. A source for this report is federalistpapers.org. That's federalistpapers.org. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. You know, the biggest challenge with these reports is not what to say, but it's what not to say. Because, you know, to get that down to the, I think it's the 4 minutes it is, you know, I think I tossed out like 8 minutes of material. So we're going to revisit Federalist 44. In fact, we're going to revisit all the various things that I'm covering here, you know, on the show, just because there's just so much information. You know, it's impossible to cover it all. All right, back to the election correction report. And we have an article here, Georgia News Star. And this is missing Fulton County chain of custody documents to be investigated by Secretary of State Raffensperger. Raffensperger, R-A-F-E-N-S-P-E-R-G-E-R, June 15th. This is by Laura Looks like B-E with an iron L. B-E-I-G-E-R-T, Laura Biegert or Biegert. Anyway, Georgia Star, Tennessee Star, Georgia Star, these are all great, great media sources. You know, so if you want to take a look and see what's going on, especially in the South, they have world news, but they're pretty cool. So I'm not sure what's going on with Ratzenberger. Is he trying to be a good guy? Is he trying to follow the law? Is he giving up his ways of, you know, covering up all the election fraud? Well, you know, is he doing it so he doesn't go to jail? You know, these are the things that I wonder about. Okay, so the article says Georgia's Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, Perger, announced Monday that a thorough investigation will be conducted of Fulton County's inability to produce the critical chain of custody documents for absentee ballots deposited in drop boxes during the November 3rd, 2020 election. Okay, chain of custody, you know, and it's like evidence. Okay, so chain of custody means, you know, you can't break the chain. You know, was that Fleetwood Mac song, "We Will Never Break the Chain"? So you can't break the chain. So in other words, the whatever documents, whatever evidence are continually under, you know, someone's supervision. So they're never out of sight. They're never out of they're never out of being watched. And whether it's cameras or people, you know, or in a locked room or something like that, they're always being maintained. And the chain of custody, the next person in the chain has to sign. So, okay, you know, you're not responsible, I'm not responsible, until such time as somebody else signs saying that they're responsible. That's the chain, okay? So that's the chain of custody. So whoever has custody has to sign that they are in charge of, you know, whatever it is during the time period that they're in charge. Okay, that's what a chain of custody is. And the documents document that the chain of custody was maintained. That's why you have them. So you get a bunch of absentee ballots, which are kind of, you know, suspect anyway, deposited in drop boxes, which is kind of suspect anyway, in Fulton County, which is Atlanta, which is kind of suspect anyway. There's a lot of reasons to be suspect. Okay, so this is what's going on. So if you have a bunch of ballots, they can't tell, you know, what, you know, when they were in custody and when they weren't. You know, that opens you up to all kinds of mischief. And this is why the forensic audits, you know, so they have to say, even if it's, you know, the chain of command wasn't maintained, you know, was something done? And that's when the experts come in, look at the paper, look at the folds, look at the ink, look at the signatures, you know, look at, see if it's a machine done or a human hand, you know, whether there's, you know, human, you know, hand oil, you know, in the paper, or whether it's just, you know, chemical stuff from, you know, photocopy machine. I mean, this is all the stuff they look into, and they have to, because the chain of custody was violated. Right? It's kind of interesting. Actually, very interesting. Article goes on. Raffensperger made his announcement via Twitter. Oh, that was brave. Following the lead story Monday in the Georgia Star News that a Fulton County election official admitted that chain of custody documents are missing. Shocked. That's what I am. Shocked. You know, for absentee ballots deposited in drop boxes in the 2020 election. So here's the Georgia Secretary of State, you know, Brad Raffensperger. He says, restoring confidence in our elections is going to be impossible as long as Fulton County's elections leadership continues to fail the voters of Fulton County and the voters of Georgia. Don't forget the rest of the country, pal. They need new leadership to step up and take charge. No, we need to know who dropped the ball and what happened when those ballots were out of custody. That's what we need. Okay. So, yeah. So there's just another reason that Georgia needs to go through an audit. Go for Vernon Jones. We'll see what happens. The article says Fulton County told the Star News in response to the open records requests initiated in December of 2020, so they've been after these for a while, that a few forms are missing. Yeah, that's like saying mistakes were made. It's along those same lines. Well, mistakes were made. Well, who made them? Well, we don't know. It's just mistakes were made. Okay, that doesn't cover it. That's like saying my bad. Okay. Well, you know, it's like taking an entire cheating election, an entire fraud election, saying, oops, my bad. Doesn't cover it. Okay. It didn't come close. Anyway, they also said, and some procedural paperwork may have been misplaced. Who writes their material? Yeah, I mean, I might as well put them in the Putin-Biden comedy hour. Same kind of thing. Article says 7 months after the election, Fulton County has been unable to produce 385 transfer forms out of an estimated 1,565. Well, that's not some. That's like, I don't know, you know, a fifth. That's like 20%. It's pretty big, you know, pretty big proportion there. Anyway, forms according to their own documentation. You know, those 385 transfer forms represent 18,901 absentee ballots placed into 37 drop boxes placed throughout Fulton County. Well, there's a problem because didn't Biden's fraudulent vote only exceed Trump's vote by about 10,000? And they got 18,000 ballots we can't account for. There you go. There's your disqualification of Fulton County right there. The number of transfer forms in the absentee ballots they represent are about 25%. It was even worse than I thought. My math sucks. 25% of the total transfer forms and absentee ballots deposited in drop boxes in Fulton County during the November 2020 election. Significantly greater than, quote, a few by any objective standard. Well, that's for sure. Since the election, Raffensperger has maintained that Georgia had safe, secure, and honest elections. Well, he doesn't believe that now, or he wouldn't be doing what he's doing. He's covering his butt. He's the rat leaving the sinking ship. He wants to be on the side of the good guy. See, look, I was a good guy. I was a good guy all along. It's BS. You know, he was one of the biggest obstacles to investing in the election, you know, in Georgia of anybody, except maybe the governor. The coward up there, what's his name, Bruce somebody? I keep forgetting. Anyway, article says, as recently as early April press release, Raffensperger gave Fulton and 119 other counties a clean bill of health with regard to filling out and retaining absentee ballot drop box transfer forms in accordance with Georgia rules. Raffensperger said at the time that of the 123 Georgia counties that had absentee ballot drop boxes for the November election, only three small counties violated Georgia rules and regulations by failing to do their absentee ballot transfer forms. The three counties, Coffee, Grady, and Taylor, were referred for investigation, and said Raffensperger. Okay, the three counties accounted for only 0.37% of the absentee ballots cast in the November election. 0.37%? That's what you're going after, dude? Less than 1.37%? That's like a third of a percent. Okay, that's what you're going after? Yeah. It never stops. I mean, it just never stops. All right, so the point of all this is that Raffensperger, trying to be the good guy, obviously isn't, and he's trying to cover his butt. All right, got a few more minutes here in this hour, then we're going to switch over to the vaccine report. Here's another one. This is from Gateway Pundit, my favorite source when it comes to all these kind of things. Actually, let me just... you know, I know it probably gets dull a little bit, you know, dry with me reading these articles, but the information is there. And if you want to provide more information or more articles or anything like that, let me know. Anyway, this should wake you up. At least I hope so.
Action Radio. Dangerously cool.
See who says we don't have fun here. All right. So I got my gain down so low. It sounds weird to me today on the show, simply because I'm trying not to overboost or, have some of the technical problems we had yesterday. Because, like I said, I don't like having my words, skipped over. All right. Here's another Gateway Pundit, Patty McMurray, June 15th. So a lot of this stuff we were talking yesterday. All right. Who says, wow, Michigan House Oversight Michigan House Oversight Chair Steve Johnson on the Arizona audit. Quote, it's a joke, a wasted effort, a disaster. Election is over. Trump is not coming back into office. Well, aren't you special? Listen to this guy. He's so clairvoyant. You know, he's the perfect, dupe of the left. Yeah, nice going there, Steve Johnson. Oversight Chair? Really? Anyway, the article says, when it comes to addressing election fraud in Michigan, Representative Steve Johnson, Republican? Gee, thanks, dude. Told you, gelding. A member of, guys, you got your ads in my way. There we go. Thank you. A member of the Elections and Ethics Committee. This gets better. The Election and Ethics Committee and chair of the House Oversight Committee, he replaced Matt Hall as the Oversight Committee chair in January, is one of the most powerful members of the state legislature. So one of the most powerful Republicans in the state legislature said, it's a joke, a wasted effort, a disaster. Election is over. Talking about the Arizona audit. Trump is not coming into office. Doesn't this exactly portray what the person's name I can't pronounce who wrote the article in American Greatness just said, that the Republicans are the biggest problem, that the lowest rung of the corruption ladder are the Republicans, that when I call them the gelding old party, you know, the castrated horse party, that's what we're talking about. This is exactly who I'm talking about. Somebody that's wimped out to the left, that's trying to please the left, trying to look good in the local leftist press, you know, someone that, has the evidence staring him in the face, hundreds of hours of testimony, hundreds of hours of videos, thousands upon thousands of affidavits, you know, all kinds of things that show clearly the election fraud, right? And this guy says, ain't happening. That's what corruption looks like, all right? So here we go, 100% fed up exclusive. Late in the evening on November 3rd, 2020, Trump had taken a sizable lead in Michigan over Joe Biden. Citizens who watched Trump win their state in 2016 went to bed that night believing Trump had won the election in their state. voters were stunned, stunned, shocked, and amazed. You know, actually, we weren't, because we got what General McInerney said, that, you know, it's going to look like Trump's ahead when you go to bed, but by the morning, you know, Biden will look like the winner. And he called it before the election. He knew the fraud. I mean, everybody knew the fraud who knew the fraud before it happened. You know, so this is why it's so sad that it was allowed to proceed. All right. So anyway, he says Trump had won the election in the state. Instead, voters were stunned when they woke up to a disaster, to discover a massive early morning dump of votes for Biden were counted in the wee hours of the morning, making Basement Joe the unofficial victor in Michigan. Okay. That's what happened in states all over the country. All right. Article says Democrats and their allies in the dishonest Michigan media expected voters to quietly accept the outcome of the election. Yeah, like hell. Never mind what voters saw with their own eyes as the unpopular Joe Biden campaigned from his basement and could barely draw a dozen people to his rallies. And they got a picture here in the Gateway Pundit article. It's really kind of funny. Remember when they had those little circles on the pavement, right? And you had like, you know, 12 people at a Joe Biden rally, all right? Well, they're right there. You can see them in their little circles with their little social distance, you know, doing their little cooperative big government thing. All right. Meanwhile, back to the article, the wildly popular President Trump drew tens of thousands to each of his multiple rallies across the Great Lakes state. Yeah. So it's impossible to believe, if you're intellectually honest, that Joe Biden could beat President Trump. It just simply can't happen, because the obvious demonstrated popularity between the two is so radically different, so huge for Trump, so completely empty for Biden, that it's impossible to believe, you know, if you're being honest, that Biden could have beat Trump. It's impossible. Okay. It's irrational. It makes no sense. You can't even argue it. All right. So the only thing they had was cheating. That's the only way this makes sense. All right. So just using simple deductive logic, simple reasoning, the only conclusion you can come to when you look at this objectively between the two candidates is that Trump was going to beat the hell out of Joe Biden, which he did, you know, in the electoral count, except for the cheating. So the cheating took place once the polls closed, everybody was sent out, and then they fixed it. That's when they did the cheating. Okay, so we all know this. So the question is, you know, is to prove it, to document it, and then to, you know, nicely ask the current occupant, the thief in chief, to vacate the White House so that the actual winner can, you know, pick up and fix this. All right. So we've got here, within 1 week of the November election in Michigan, over 240 affidavits outlining voter fraud and voter irregularities witnessed by GOP poll challengers, a Detroit City worker, and a Dominion contract worker were filed in Michigan. 240 affidavits, and that's just Michigan. Okay. Additionally, it was discovered that over 5,000 votes had flipped from President Trump to Joe Biden in Antrim County, Michigan, where Dominion voting machines were used. Okay. Antrim is the hospital. That's Matt DiPerno. There's a lot of stuff going on there. All right. As a result of the massive errors in Antrim County, a lawsuit was filed against Antrim County resident Bill Bailey. Let me just make sure. Why was it filed against him? All right, I'll keep reading. Circuit Court Judge Kevin A. Elsenheimer agreed to allow Bill Bailey's attorney, Matt DiPerno, to bring a team of IT experts to perform a forensic audit. That's Matt DiPerno. We've talked about him before. Right? To perform a forensic audit on the Dominion voting machines used in the election. The initial report on the results from the audit was released on December 13th, 2020. It showed a reported error rate of 68.05%, meaning an astounding 68% of ballots cast in Antrim County, Michigan, were allegedly sent to adjudication, meaning the ballots would be analyzed by someone other than the voter to determine the intent of the voter. Okay, let me explain that. All right. So adjudication. So the voting machines, you know, kick out, they're programmed to kick out a huge percentage of votes. 68%, that's over two-thirds. So over two-thirds of the votes of the ballots in this one county were kicked out of the machines, you know, for adjudication, to see what the voter really intended, okay? That's how you cheat, okay? That's one of the many ways. So you take these votes for adjudication, and you fill them out the way you think, you know, the voter wanted to vote. And if you think, you know, 99% of the people wanted to vote for Biden, that's how you fill out those adjudicated votes, those ballots, okay? And so this is exactly what happened, all right? Article says, for months, Michigan citizens called on leadership in the state legislature to take action and address the hundreds of claims by GOP poll challengers who were threatened by election workers who witnessed voter fraud or irregularities, or were threatened and intimidated by paid election workers or leftist agitators at the TCF Center, where hundreds of thousands of absentee ballots were counted. Many of the GOP poll challengers testified in front of the Michigan House and our Senate oversight committees. Well, guess who runs the oversight committee? The guy that says that there's nothing to the fraud. That's where the fix is in. Right? See how it all works? Right? You know, Paul Ryan fixed the House, you know, for the deep state. Mike Pence fixed the election of Joe Biden for the deep state. The actor's always there. Dr. Fascist ran the coronavirus task force and fixed the vaccine market for Big Pharma. So there's always an operative. You know, Chris Wray at the FBI, you know, who had a coup on Trump previously, are being entrusted to investigate January 6th. His job is to arrest all the people politically opposed to Joe Biden and keep them in solitary confinement. He basically has a bunch of political prisoners, and we can talk about that too if you want. I mean, I'll do that next hour. That in itself deserves a separate report because there's a huge article that's come out from Revolver. So they've just jumped in prominence, you know, onto the national scene. Back to this article. On December 16, 2020, after over 100 witnesses testified to voter fraud or voter irregularities from Michigan's legislature's House and Senate Oversight Committees, committee chairs Senator Ed McBroom and Representative Matt Hall issued subpoenas demanding the subpoena gave Detroit City Clerk Janice Winfrey and Livonia City Clerk Susan Nash until January 12, 2021 to produce the evidence, giving lawmakers 8 days to produce the results of the subpoena before the next president was to be sworn in office. The subpoenas demanded they surrender, here we go, absentee voter counting board laptops, emails, logs related to all poll watchers and poll challengers, as well as all communication with the City of Detroit poll workers, all hard drives and memory drives for adjudication machines that were used during the absentee voter count board stuff process, a list of workers hired to be adjudicators at the TCF Center where absentee ballots were counted, as well as a list of hired election workers with their political party affiliation. Well, that's interesting. The subpoenas also demanded a record of the public accuracy test for all Dominion machines. This is so important. I want to keep reading this. Although there's a lot to the article. I think I might leave it. So you can see the detail they want to go into. It says all names of Dominion employees at the TCF Center and a record of any communications they had with any employees of Detroit public election officials, as well as records of any computers connected to the Internet. They also wanted that too. So this is they're looking for the good stuff. All right. Now, here's the headline in the article. It's been over 6 months since the deadline for all subpoena materials to be turned over to the House and Senate Oversight Committees. It's been over 6 months since the deadline for all subpoena materials to be turned over to the House and Senate Oversight Committees. Guess what hasn't happened yet? So we wanted to know why the evidence has not been released. Okay. So back to the article. This is kind of cool. This is all the same article I started earlier. Michigan residents have been patiently waiting for the results to be shared with them. But apparently, Representative Steve Johnson has no intention of sharing the evidence with the citizens he represents. Why? Representative Steve Johnson told us he isn't releasing the evidence because he doesn't believe the evidence he's seen proves there was any, quote, serious election fraud. Okay? Let me explain that. All right. So I read a lot of material. I went through a lot of stuff that these folks have been requesting, you know, by subpoena to be turned over so it can be analyzed. Representative Steve Johnson, head of the Oversight Committee, Republican, toady, you know, gelding, worker up for the deep state, you know, said it's a joke, a wasted effort, a disaster. Election is over. Trump is not coming back into office. So he's already predisposed to get rid of anything that actually analyzes the election. Okay, so he should recuse himself. Or he should be recalled. I would say recall would be the better choice, okay? So here's the guy responsible for handling all the evidence that comes in of vote fraud, and he doesn't believe there's any vote fraud, okay? You see a little conflict of interest there? So that's the problem, okay? That's for the deep state. He's the deep state operative. He's the one that's there to head off all the evidence to make sure it never gets out. That's his job, okay? So the subpoenas demand they surrender all this stuff that I read. I only read one paragraph out of the four that they demanded. They demanded a lot of stuff, okay? So it says it's been over 6 months since the deadline for subpoena materials. So they're 6 months late with all their stuff. Okay? All right. So serious election fraud. That gets to a really bizarre theory. Okay? This is really bizarre theory that, Bill Barr had the same theory. He says, well, there wasn't enough election fraud to change the result of the election. Okay? That's like saying, you know, the home invader didn't steal enough of your property to make you homeless. Therefore, it's not really a crime. The bank robber didn't steal enough money from the bank to put them out of business. Therefore, it's really, you know, not serious, okay? This is a bunch of BS. This is what they're saying. So they're saying, you know, unless there's enough election fraud to overturn the results, then it doesn't matter. Well, that's a bunch of BS, okay? Because there is enough election fraud. You know, any election fraud is enough to disqualify, all right? So this is how they get around it. They say that, well, it's not really serious. That's like when Margaret the Liberal used to be on the show, and I'd give a, you know, carefully reasoned argument with facts and all that kind of stuff. And she'd say, well, that's just your opinion. You know, I have to say, well, that's just your opinion. I said, you know, saying it's just my opinion is not an argument. Okay. That's totally dismissing all the evidence. In fact, people like her, you know, don't even know when they're wrong. They don't even know when they've lost an argument. They just come back with the talking points. That's why there's no point in talking to some people. All right. Because no matter what you say, they'll say something really stupid like, well, that's just your opinion. Okay. Well, I just gave you a whole argument, you know, prove me wrong. Well, they can't. They just say it's just your opinion. Well, that doesn't prove me wrong. In fact, that's meaningless. You know, you might as well just say the sky is blue. Okay. Well, actually that has more relevance because the sky actually is blue. All right. Back to the article here. So now I've explained serious election fraud. The next headline, but that's not all. You know, it's like the hits just keep on coming. We received, this is Gateway Pundit, we received an anonymous tip that unelected House lawyers are telling Representative Johnson, you know, the gelding, that he cannot share evidence from the subpoenas with fellow members of Congress unless they agree to sign an NDA, non-disclosure agreement. This is from the author. It says, I spoke with Steve Johnson by phone to ask him a few questions about the alleged agreement and other issues related to potential election fraud in the November election. On Johnson's refusal to share the results of the subpoenaed information, which means it should be public, Johnson confirmed with me that members of the Michigan legislature are being told they must sign a non-disclosure agreement, but only to share documents related to the evidence subpoenaed by the House and Senate oversight committees. No one's saying we can't look at the evidence. We're just saying they can't disclose the actual documents. Well, that's stupid. Anyway, it goes on and on and on. This is kind of a mess. Representative Johnson confirmed that lawmakers have the ability to look at the evidence, but they can't actually disclose the documents. What's the point of having them if you can't disclose them? All right, there's more on this article. It's a big article, and there's a lot to see, but I'll let you look at that as we go. I'll probably get I'll see if there's anything else I want to do here, and then it might be time to get the vaccine report. So let me see. I've got some fun stuff to hold you over here for a little bit. And I'll be back in a little bit, as I say. I got to find a new thing to say other than a little bit. I'll work on that.
Joe Biden's dark winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try, even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. You know, I forget this one has a little bit of a lag. Here we go.
At Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements. And we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener. And help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day.
Okay, let me tell you what's going on here. I'm getting a video in my headset. So sorry for the delay. I've got to turn off this video. Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to do the show here. So I got to find it. There it is. Okay, stop talking. Ah, there we go. Okay. this is one of those things that happens sometimes. We have a little technical difficulty. And so in this case, I got an article I wanted to cover, but unfortunately, that article had a video. And unfortunately, that video started playing. And unfortunately, I had my mic muted. So I couldn't tell you exactly what happened. But I want to play a couple more things, and then I'll be back. So if you want to call in, 215-383-3832. We have much more to do, and I'll get to that article that interrupted me so rudely in just a minute. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. Okay, we're having all kinds of crazy technical difficulties today. My things aren't playing as well as I'd like them to. I'm not sure what's going on, but that's okay. We got Bert on the line. Bert hosts a show on Blog Talk Radio. Bert is, by self-admission, a neo-Nazi, and has an interesting perspective that I completely disagree with, but he has a right to disagree with me, and that's okay. So let's bring Bert on and hear what he has to say. Bert, what's going on?
Hi, good morning, Greg. How are you doing today?
I'm fine. I'm a little confused by some of the technical things going on, but other than that, you know, I'm trying to be the producer maestro of my show. Yeah.
Yeah, it does that sometimes. Gets a little attitude. We've had some times on our shows where we couldn't even log in at all, and we're on premium account, as you well know. So, yeah, it doesn't happen a lot, but it does happen from time to time. But, yeah. I wanted to point out a couple of things referencing, you know, I understand the frustration and the environment – of what everybody's complaining about, particularly on your podcast about Trump technically being the elected president of the United States, but yet he doesn't sit in the White House. And I tend to go back to the same thing. We're on the same page with a lot of things. I know you say you don't agree with it, but whether you realize
or not,
we agree with a lot of things.
We're not on the same page.
Yeah, I mean,
Bert, you're a neo-Nazi. We're not on the same
page.
Well,
do you agree that Trump should be in the White House?
Well, yeah, but do you agree that – okay, all right, I'll grant you that. Yeah, so we agree on that. but we cover this from such fundamentally different points of view that to find out where we agree, anyway, go ahead.
It's the tactics. It's not the views that we disagree on. It's the tactics. That's where we're different.
No,
because if you take a step back,
we're completely different. You're a neo-Nazi, and I'm a constitutional independent. That's where we're different.
Well, you are
anyway,
constantly
go ahead. No.
Being labeled as a Nazi, though. Right? I mean, every conservative I know out there is called a Nazi by the left constantly, whether
right.
they are
okay,
or
but that,
not.
That's
are,
just
is
a, that's a tactic. Well, I mean, think of it. That's called projection. Okay. So actually, you raised a really good point. So let's get into that. Projection is describing other people as what you are. So in other words, if you're a gun-hating liberal, you know, you say that all conservatives are violent, so we have to take their guns away, even though that's projection. So the liberal projects their gun phobias, you know, onto conservatives as a rationalization for their own phobias, which they can't justify themselves, but they put it onto conservatives and we've got to take the guns away from conservatives because they're nasty people. They commit crimes and, you know, they test people in schools and stuff.
So you are anti-Second Amendment?
What? No, not at all. I'm absolutely pro Second Amendment. What I'm explaining
Isn't
to you is projection.
Funny? Because what? We are too. Isn't that funny?
Okay. All right. If you're going to go down the list of saying, hey, do you agree with this in the Constitution? I do. But you got to understand that we're fundamentally disagreeing here. And this is why I don't want anybody to misunderstand the point that your perspective is neo-Nazi, which is leftist, and my perspective is constitutional independent, which is freedom and the republic and all that good stuff. That's the difference.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that's a matter of opinion. See, we don't look at ourselves that way. We look at ourselves as being on the radical right. We're right of conservatives. So
no, you're not.
And it doesn't matter.
No, you're not.
Well, it doesn't matter what third Reich Germany stood for. We know what we stand for. So
okay, Bert, in the interest of everybody listening and you, let me explain through my usual logic and reason why Nazis are leftists. It's impossible for you to not be leftists. Okay, let me explain this. All right, it's actually fairly simple. All right, you know, if you look at the Nazi regime of Adolf Hitler, or you look at Stalin, or you look at Mao, or you look at any totalitarian leftist, they all believe in total government. Okay, everything they do revolves around, you know, the state. Mussolini. I did a very extensive discussion on Mussolini's fascist state and the definition of fascism. And everything goes to the state. There is no religion because it competes with the state. Okay, the state is everything. You worship the state. You live for the state. You know, your life means nothing. Everything goes to the state. And so that's the group thing. Okay, and that includes whether it's Nazism or fascism or socialism or communism or any ism you can think of. All those isms are on the left because they all involve the state. They don't involve individual rights. You know, you couldn't go through Nazi Germany and carry a sign saying, you know, limited government. Okay, you couldn't carry a sign saying individual rights. You couldn't carry a sign saying, we believe in the Constitution, because they didn't believe in
it. Well, you can't do that here either without being attacked.
Okay, well, but you're still missing the point. The point is that the leftist orientation is towards total government, and the right orientation, well, actually, the extreme right is anarchy, and I don't believe in that either. But if you're on the right side of the political spectrum where the founding fathers are, you believe in extremely limited government, you absolutely believe in individual rights, and you believe in a constitution that does limit government. You believe in a republic, not a democracy, okay? And that's your orientation. So all... You know, Nazism, fascism, socialism, communism, by definition, are leftists because they use totalitarian power to carry out their means. Just the same thing as white supremacists are also on the left because, you know, the belief is using government to separate the races, using government totalitarian power without regard to individual rights or anything, you know, that would smack of a constitution of independence, of freedom, of anything else. See, that's the difference. That's why...
Well,
you know, neo-Nazis, Nazis
are
leftists.
I tend to disagree with you about that. But, well, I
of
mean,
course
I,
you
just,
do.
I don't see it because if that's the case, then why
How
are we constantly being attacked?
Okay, wait a minute.
Because
where am I
constantly
wrong?
Being attacked by leftists. So leftists hate us. So how can you
Which
say that we're
funny.
On the left? I mean,
wait.
Assuming that you're...
Hold on a second. Bert, you know, Nazis are leftists. Communists are leftists. The biggest war in World War II was between the leftist Nazis and the leftist communists on the Russian front. That's where World War II was. There were 120 divisions fighting on the Eastern Front. There was about 20 divisions fighting on the Western Front. The Eastern Front, the war between Germany and Russia was five times bigger than the war between the Allies and Germany. Okay. In fact, if Russia hadn't taken on Germany, the Allies would have lost. Well, that's where Nazis come from.
Okay,
that's what I'm doing.
Right, and I get that, but we're not Nazis. We're neo-Nazis. There's a difference. We're American-born. So, I mean, but if you want to go...
Well, that doesn't mean anything.
I mean, it means a lot. I'm not from Germany. I didn't live during World War II. I wasn't even born until 30, 40
years. No, you're not from Russia either. All right, okay, but whether you're a communist, whether you're a Russian leftist or a German leftist or an American leftist, you're still a leftist. Okay,
I'll agree to disagree with you on that, Greg. You're the only person
Prove
I've ever
wrong.
Heard say that in my life, to be honest.
Prove
with
me
you.
Wrong. Prove me wrong that you don't believe in totalitarian government power. Prove me wrong.
It was simple. Hitler said in Mein Kampf, in his own words, that communism is the enemy of national socialism. There is no greater enemy of communism than national socialism. So if one's
That's
on the left,
me
how
wrong.
Can the other one
Bert,
be on the left, too?
Bert. That's not proving me wrong. Okay, you're using an assumption that's not true, that can't be proven, that there can only be one leftist party. Okay, you're assuming that the communists are left, therefore everybody else is not left. Okay, you can't make that assumption. All right.
Communism is the radical left. Socialism is one spot to the right of communism.
Okay, you're talking about shades of degrees of totalitarianism. You're still in a totalitarian state. You still don't believe in individual rights, in a constitution, in a free republic, in a limited budget, and the limited powers of government. You don't. Because you can't.
Sure we do.
No, you don't.
How do you know what we stand for, Greg?
Well, then you're not, in that case, you're not neo-Nazis, if that's what you're saying.
Yeah, you're trying to manipulate the word, so I digress on
no,
that.
No, I'm trying
to
use the definition.
About that.
Bert, I'm trying to use
the definition of what? I've never heard that before in my life.
Okay, well, it's time you did. Okay, I'm not trying to be mean to you.
Said,
I'm just trying to.
But,
all right, so go with the logic. Go with the logic and go with the reason. Show me any place where Nazis or neo-Nazis don't use totalitarian government power to achieve their aims.
Well, you're comparing it to Hitler, and Hitler very easily did the opposite of what the communist regime did. He left the defense contractors and everybody.
Wait.
You keep bringing up the Third Reich, so I was trying to give you a comparison. Yeah,
but it's a false comparison. Because you've got a leftist communist versus leftist Nazis. It's a false comparison. You're saying because communists are leftists, the Nazis are not leftists.
So how could it be?
You can't.
You going to give me a chance to present it?
Okay, fine. I'm sorry.
Okay. Don't get all worked up. It's okay. So what happened during World War II with Hitler is communism controls every aspect of your life. You have no say-so in anything, which is what you're talking about, totalitarian government.
Oh, did you think you had say-so under Nazism? Did you have a say-so in your life under Nazism?
Was not. Absolutely not. It was not. Because,
so you just
because
proved my point.
Defense contractors – well, let me finish. Okay, so what we have here in America today is the equivalent of communism. It's a softer communism known as socialism. So everybody gets a trophy. All the kids get first place. Doesn't matter. There's no losers. Everybody's a winner. That's what communism essentially is. National socialism does not work that way. There is a first place. There is a second place. There is a third place. And the first place wins because first place is the winner. So whenever they created the weapons over there, the tanks, the guns, whatever it is that you were talking about, the best people for the best job, first place won. There was no points for second place. Second sucked. And that's the way it worked. It was not ran by the government. It was not ran by Hitler. It was not ran by the Third Reich. It was ran by the best person for the job. They competed to get it. That's what we used to do here in America. We don't do that
nonsense
anymore.
That is such nonsense, I can't tell you. To say that Germany had a meritocracy? Are you kidding? People were appointed because of who they knew, how their loyalty to the party, their loyalty to Hitler, their loyalty to the Nazi ideology.
So,
there was no
so
meritocracy.
The fact that they turned out
people
the best
weren't appointed by merit.
The tactics of the world, the fact that they turned out the best weapons and the best tanks and the most advanced technology the world has ever seen is because they hired
they lost.
The Chucky's people? Is that what you're telling me?
They lost. Okay, so the ability to produce good
weapons.
But done in a free society? No, they were done with slave labor. They were done with people who were conscripted. Why do you think all the German scientists left? Okay, if they were so free, if they were in such a free system,
concentration camp. Wait.
That's my turn. Wait. We'll get on concentration camps later. Let me finish my point. And my point is that the best scientists, Einstein, Wernher von Braun, a bunch of other folks that went to Russia that I don't even know about, they were captured. But the scientists that came to our country that actually, really helped our space program, okay, they left Nazi Germany as quickly as they could. They were imprisoned in Nazi Germany. So, yeah, if you force somebody into slave labor to create things for you, are you going to kill their – I'm not finished yet. If you force people into slave labor to create weapons, otherwise their family is getting killed, that's not a free society. You can't say that Germany, under their national socialist system, produced the best weapons because they had the best system. Nonsense. They're a totalitarian system, which you still haven't been able to counter that argument. Everything you've said so far reinforces
the fact
that they're a totalitarian government. What's that?
It's not a coincidence that these people were Germans. The Germans were very good at what they did. Wernher von Braun is the reason why the United States walked on the moon. I don't know if you know
that
or not. He was a Nazi scientist.
I know that. But was he a member of the Nazi Party?
I mean, that's
okay,
just
wait,
one.
Wait, stop, 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 stop.
That's just one.
Bert, was he a member of the Nazi Party? Was he a Sieg Heil saluting Nazi, Wernher von Braun, or was he forced to do the work he did because he was brilliant?
A bit of both. He wasn't forced to do anything, but he did it because he was the best.
I don't believe you. I don't think you can show me that. If he was that loyal to Germany, why didn't he stay in Germany and rebuild Germany after the war?
Because
why
it was bombed out
States?
And destroyed. They captured him in Bavaria, and he was extradited to the United States since the Cold War had started.
Okay.
Russia got some of the great scientists. America got the others.
Did he go back to Germany?
No. I'm sure he did at some point. Well, not to work for the German government. No, he stayed here.
He didn't go back to live there, okay? So in other words, he was here. But you're still missing the point, though, and you still have been able to show that, and I don't know for sure because I don't know Wernher von Braun's history that well, but I would tend to doubt that he was an active member of the Nazi Party, actively supporting, Hitler before he was elected. And the weird thing was Hitler was elected. Then he usurped powers and did all kinds of things. But the Nazis still believe in totalitarian government to achieve their aims, everything for the state. Same thing as Mussolini,
well,
same thing as Stalin, same thing as Mao, same thing as Pol Pot, same thing as all these dictators. You know, same thing as Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. They still believe in totalitarian power, and that's what makes them leftists. And you still haven't been able to counter that because you can't. There is no way to counter that. I'm right. You can't defeat that argument.
You're not right.
Yes, I am. Saying I'm not right is not a counter argument, by the way. What's that?
You're not right. You're not right.
Yes, I am.
I mean, we'll just agree to disagree on that. I mean,
no,
what
we won't
we
agree to disagree. I'm right. You can't prove me wrong because you can't prove – because the evidence is overwhelming that, that leftist governments use totalitarian means to carry out their objectives. That makes them leftist. You can't defeat that argument.
Then what
it's impossible.
What do the Nazis
Unless
fight
you lie.
With Russians and communists for then?
Well, because there were leftists beating up other leftists. What do you think happened in Charlottesville? Same thing. you don't think there's leftist on leftist violence? Oh, please.
Oh,
you don't think Russia and China are adversaries?
They all stand for the same thing.
No, they don't.
No, they're companions.
Who?
Russia and China. But in,
oh, they're buds?
Yeah, I mean that's
really?
that's a combination.
Do they have an open border? Do they have an open border?
No,
or do they
have an understanding.
Troops?
They have a friendship.
Oh, yeah, well, maybe only because of the United States and they're unified against us. But I mean Russia. You know, Russia and China have had a hostile relationship for a long time. You don't think they're the two big kids on the block right now? You know, in on the Asian continent?
Oh, I know they are because of our degeneracy here in America. Yeah, they could easily wipe us
out. Our degeneracy. Okay, so let's get back to the fundamental question that, you know, you say we agree because you're on the right, and that simply isn't true.
Well, you find the Nazis and the National Socialist movement to be disgusting because of its reputation. You're kind of one of those people that are concerned with what other people think.
Well, it's not the reputation, it's the historic record.
We don't care what other people think.
Bert, it's the historic
record.
Well,
what is?
Well, I find the Nazis and the communists and the fascists disgusting. Is what they do. They killed massive amounts of people. If you didn't conform to what they said, they killed you. Okay, that's totalitarianism.
There's
no democracy in there. There's no republic in there. There's no individual rights. If you don't believe in what they believe, they kill you. Well, first they send you to re-education camps. I don't know. The millions of people who have been killed? Gee, how about that for a start?
So they told you?
Who's they?
These people that have been killed.
Well, if they've been killed, they couldn't tell me anything, now could they?
Well, exactly my point. So I'm trying to figure out where you're finding this evidence from.
Oh, I don't know. Like I say, the historic record, the documented cases of the people who've died in the gulags, in the concentration camps, you know, in the death camps, in the Chinese re-education camps and everything else. Everybody's camp. I don't know why they call them camps. But you look at the people who've died in Russia and China and Germany and Italy and all the people who oppose totalitarian, fascist, Nazi, communist, socialist governments. That's the historic record.
So you're listening to what other people are telling you.
What the hell does that mean?
It's simple. You're listening to what other people tell you. So
didn't I just say the historic record, which anybody can read, documented history.
Yeah, and anybody can write too.
Okay, all right. If you're going to go that route, then we're not going to get anywhere because you're using false claims and false evidence. If you're saying the historic record, the documented history that people have spent a whole long time putting down, you know, on paper, so everybody would have a record of it, is wrong just because you think it's somebody else's opinion, then we can't go anywhere from there. You've left
me
nowhere to go. What's that?
Why is it, if you let me talk, why is it against the law in Europe?
Why let you talk all the time?
They will throw you in jail if you question this. Now, if it's true, then why is it illegal and punishable by jail, if not worse, for even questioning it? If it's true, there shouldn't be any problem. It shouldn't be backed by law. That says that you have to believe
about?
It. If you want to ask a question about it, the facts should be there. It's illegal in Germany to question the Holocaust today. It's illegal in most of Europe to question the Holocaust. So if it's true, why is it illegal?
I don't agree with you. I don't think it's illegal to question it. I think it's illegal to
names of people that are in prison, that are incarcerated today for questioning and denying the Holocaust. There's
that's kind of stupid because it happened. Everybody knows
it. Because she didn't believe it.
Okay, wait. It's not a question of belief. It's not whether you believe in the Holocaust or whether you don't believe in the Holocaust. The Holocaust happened. Okay? And so if that's your perspective, if that's your point of view, if you're just – you're basically making up stuff to suit your opinion. It's like people or your ideology. It's like when I had, you know, a liberal caller that I give a nice logical argument to. And I went over this in the show earlier. Nice logical argument, you know, with facts and evidence and the whole bit. And she says, well, that's just your opinion. Well, it's not just my opinion. It's documented facts. The Holocaust is one of the most documented events in history there is.
That doesn't make it fact. That doesn't make it fact just because it's documented.
No, no, no. It does make it fact.
History is replete with lies.
No, no, no. Bert.
No, it
Bert,
does not. How can you say
yes,
that?
Yes, it does. Because that's what documenting is. Documenting is when you make it a fact. when you determine that it's true. That's what documenting is. Okay?
Okay. We'll roll with that, I guess. I'm glad everybody doesn't think that way. Nothing against
okay,
you.
All right.
You believe everything you're told.
If you don't go with the basic definitions of English words, then we have nowhere to go. Okay? If you can change the definition of English words to anything that you assume them to be or anything you want them to be, then there's no point in talking.
I'm
there's nowhere to go with
it. Prove it. That's my only argument.
It's already been
Greg.
Proved.
Prove it.
It's already been proved.
By writing it on a piece of paper is not proving it, Greg.
Well, it's more than just writing it on a piece of paper. Witness testimony, affidavits, videos, documentation by soldiers who were there, by Eisenhower himself, who freed the camps. Okay? You know, it's – I don't even have to talk about this with you. You're wasting my time.
So how do you explain
it's a
George
totally
Patton,
bogus
though?
Argument. All right. I'll give
how
you one
you explain
more chance.
George Patton?
Explain George Patton what?
George Patton said that we fought on the wrong side and we fought against the wrong enemy. How do you explain that?
Well,
that's our best general.
He's well, that's disagreeable too. Okay, you know, best general compared to what? I mean, yeah, he was one of our strongest generals. Yes, absolutely. But do you say that before the end of World War II or after the end of World War II?
After it was over.
Okay, well, it's easy to say then. So what he objected to was the fact that he thought our next enemy was Russia, which it turned out to be true. So what are you arguing now? I'm confused.
I'm sorry. Say that one more time. I didn't catch the last thing.
Well, you mentioned George Patton. What are you bringing him up for? And what are you saying? We
because
fought
he was
the
there.
War on the wrong side.
He saw what happened. He saw the camps. He saw what was going on there, and he said that we fought the wrong enemy. This was America's not a
no.
General.
Stop. No, you're joining two things that aren't connectable. Okay, you're saying that he saw the camps, and then because he saw the camps, you're saying we fought the wrong enemy. That's nonsense. That makes no sense at all. You're talking nonsense.
Well, that's documented.
Seeing the camps is – all right, let me finish. It's my show. Seeing the camps is documenting the camps. Saying that he, in terms of policy, thinks that we should then declare war on Russia, which he did believe, okay? That's probably why he was recalled. You know, that we have the army there. And, you know, I've seen this. This is what he talked about, was that he believed that we should then fight Russia since we're already there in Europe, kick them back across – across the Iron Curtain, which would not have been necessarily a bad thing considering what happened to Eastern Europe when we pulled out. Okay, so in many respects, Patton was right. But to say that Patton said we were fighting the wrong enemy, and then to say that somehow means the Holocaust didn't happen is an irrational statement. You're making connections that can't. You're trying to make connections
that
are possible
verbatim.
To make because you're not. You're not following
I'm
just
not making
basic
that
logic.
Up, you can look it up yourself. He said that.
Wait, hang on. Wait, wait,
we
wait,
fought
wait.
The wrong enemy.
Okay, Bert. Enough. Stop. Jesse, your turn.
Bert needs to call George Soros because George Soros, when he was 14 years old, he was lined up to go on the slaughter with the rest of the Jewish people to be exterminated. And his father gave a lot of money to one of the guards to save his life at 14 years old. And that's why George Soros is alive today. As a Jewish kid, that he was 14 years old. And George Soros was going door to door to make a list of the Jewish people, what kind of gold they have, what kind of items they had. So the Holocaust is real. Bert is just like one of those children in America that they're told the communist doesn't exist. I lived through it. That's why I came to America. And any German people, which I have German friends and I have stories that they went through all this and they flee to other countries. But the American children that celebrate Che Guevara, they're being lied to. And all these Nazi things, they're being lied to. I lived through it. You only read about it. And it is real. I have Jewish friends that their grandparents were murder, okay? And you only are reading about it. But I have friends, they have people that went through the Holocaust, and it is real.
Let me explain
it's
something.
Not a lot.
Let me explain something to the listeners so that everybody understands what's going on. And Bert, you know, like I say, I'm going to give you one more comment, and that's going to be it. Bert has to believe, you know, in order to fit his ideology, that the Holocaust didn't happen, because he wants to believe that the Nazis were good people, and good people didn't do the Holocaust. Okay,
they were
that's
not
irrational.
Good people.
I know they're not good people. I mean, they're the worst people, some of the worst people that ever lived, you know, and I put them right there with, you know, Genghis Khan's marauders and, you know, the Muslim, you know, hordes that destroyed, you know, Europe and any of the conquerors and the Spanish conquistadors that destroyed, you know, entire civilizations, the Mayans, the Aztecs. I mean, the history is full of this, okay? So, but if you want to, you know, associate yourself and call yourself a neo-Nazi, you have to believe that the Nazis were good. Okay, that is irrational because the Nazis were not good. So you have to believe something that isn't true. So you have to twist your mind and think that the Holocaust didn't happen, because you still have to basically believe that Nazis were good, because Britt thinks of himself as a good person. I don't know for sure. I mean, he probably is. So Britt's probably a decent person. He just has a belief that I don't understand. And,
Greg,
yeah.
He sounds like a nice young man. I mean, but he's been brainwashed as a young man. Mm-hmm. Who believe in this. It's just like Black Lives Matter. They believe in all this
Marxist.
They believe in Antifa.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of young kids like my cousin. Let me give you an example. My cousin, he's an MS-13.
Mm-hmm.
And he got involved with the wrong, and he's in Mexico, and he's an MS-13. They torture people by burning them with cigarette burns, and then they burn their eyeballs. And then that way they don't see them when they're cutting them. That's what he was telling us. This is
the MS-13,
and they believe in that. So this is like a religion to Bert, because that's what he's been told. But he hasn't experienced it like I have. I have machine guns as a young 15-year-old girl, okay? We didn't have toilet paper like it was happening to America.
Yeah.
It is here. Communism is here, and Americans are still asleep. That they don't believe
And listen, and my stories are similar. I crossed Checkpoint Charlie. I crossed the Berlin Wall. I spent a full day in communist East Berlin. I visited the Dachau concentration camp memorial. So I've seen for myself, you know, how this works. And whether it's fascism, Nazism, communism, socialism, all the isms of totalitarianism have the same basic thing, that you serve the state or you die. It's just that simple. Bert, let me give you one more chance to comment, and then I'm going to let you go. Bert?
Okay, no problem. Well, a couple of things. Just because you happen to have lived in South America and seen a few things about socialism does not make you experienced in communism or Nazism, for that matter. I understand that they're socialist countries, but that's very, very green compared to the type of communism that we're referring to. Second, just want to be clear about one thing, that I don't deny that the Holocaust happened. I have said that publicly. What I have said is that I do not know if the Holocaust happened or not, because I am judging it because I was not there.
Why is
that
important
to you?
It
doesn't matter if you.
Why is that important to you?
Because there's an old Russian proverb that says the Jew cries out in pain as he strikes you. So this is what Jewish people do, and I'm
basing
it on what I see today. Absolutely.
I've never heard that before.
Look it up.
Well, obviously, you hate
the Jew
Jews.
Cries out in pain.
We've got that. So you've got this in common with Nazis. You got the hatred of the Jewish religion and Jewish people. Okay, so that we established that.
I judge them today, not
them.
From 1945. That's the difference.
Them?
So I see what they're doing.
How do you judge
today, and the things
them?
That you're the Jews. Because the things that you're complaining about
them?
Are done by Jews. I mean, well, take a look at Attorney General Barr, what he did to Donald Trump. What do you think? What do you think, he's a goyim? He's a Jew. Look at his son-in-law, Jared Kushner. Messed up his daughter. Now she converted.
So the Jews are responsible for all the problems. She, you know, I've never heard that before, Bert. Bert, you're so full of it.
Well, that's the reality that I deal with. So that's how I see it.
Now,
I
let Bert go. Bert, hold up.
Hey, Bert. There is a lot of Jews that are traitors, including a lot of my sales reps, that they love the radical Joe Biden, Obama, and all that, and they hate their own country because they've been brainwashed that the Democrats is the best party ever. I have a lot of friends. I grew up with Jewish people, okay? But not all of them are the same, because a lot of my sales for my business, that they come, they're traitors to their own people, but not all of them are like that, sweetie. They're not, because my closest friends, they're better than my own sister.
You know, I've muted Bert. Bert can Bert's welcome to listen in, but I'm not going to bring him back on the show today. Anytime you generalize, I mean, the definition of hatred and prejudice and bigotry is whenever you say the word all followed by some group, all white people, yes. all Jews, all
yes.
blacks,
you
all.
Say that.
The minute someone says all, that's it. You've already defined yourself. You've got prejudice. You've got hatred.
Yes.
You've got an irrationality that makes no sense. You have to justify that with lies. You tell yourself lies over and over again to justify your prejudice and your bigotry. And I don't care whether it's Black Lives Matter or Antifa or any of the totalitarian mm-hmm. groups out there. They all have the same thing. They all have the prejudice, and they want to make everybody else them. They want to segregate the country into us and them. And I won't stand for it. The whole one of the big points of the show is the fact that we're all Americans. Okay, and if you don't want to be an American, that's fine. You know, you can. There are several things you can do. You know, Russia, China, you know, North Korea. Yeah, well, maybe not there.
Yeah.
I don't know if they take people. But the point is that it's a twisted ideology. It's a warped conscience that, you know, like I said, the minute I hear the word all, that's it. You've already told me everything I need to know.
You're right.
Absolutely.
All right. That's what I just said. That's what I just said.
Oh, good. I'm glad you did.
Some of the Jewish people are being brainwashed, and they hate their own. Like some of my salesmen, you know, they hate Trump. They hate anything conservative. I said, wait a minute. Look at what's happening to Israel right now, Greg. They cheated exactly the same way they did here with Trump. And that's why Prime Minister Benjamin, he's out because they cheated. He'll be back.
Oh, see, that's interesting. Now, I haven't heard that before. Okay. So if you have some documentation, send it to the Action Radio group. I didn't know they cheated. I mean, like I said, this is the first I'm hearing of it. So why would Netanyahu, knowing what happened here, knowing how the Democrats stole the election here, and knowing that Obama spent some $300,000, you know, trying to throw the election of Netanyahu in the last election, what is Obama back there in Israel? Is he? Do you try and toss this one too?
But he's him and George Soros and. Ilhan Omar and Rashiha are all in it with the Palestinians to throw the government of Israel to take over Israel. This is all well organized, all of it. Oh yeah.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth to that
because Israel,
you know, and here's what's really amazing: when Trump was and who should be back in power again, Israel had a really great future with the Abraham Accords, with the different countries coming together, you know, with the agreements they were making. It's really pretty amazing. All right, I want to read something. I want to change the subject a little bit. We've got about 20 minutes left. And
but let me say
minutes.
Quickly, there's never going to be peace in Israel with the Palestinians. There's not going to be peace until Jesus Christ returns.
Okay.
Go ahead with your report.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, you can stick around. You can comment too. But, you know, as far as Israel goes, the Palestinian people are not a people. You know, as Claire Lopez explained, you know, went through the whole history of, you know, the Hashemites who became the, I forgot where the word Palestine comes from. It's a made up word. So they're not a real people. They're people of different, you know, Arab countries that kind of got dumped there. And there are a bunch of Arab countries that should take their people back. I mean, there is no need for a Palestinian state because there's not a people. Go ahead.
They're from all these haters and evil people in that area. They're from the bloodline of Ishmael that God didn't want it. But anyway, go ahead with your report.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Oh, okay. Okay. Well, all right. So let me get into this here. So this is something that you might want to know about too, because we have a friend of the show here, Anthony Sabatini. He's a representative. He's running for Congress, I'm hoping to get him. I'm hoping to get him back on the show. So here's an article I found in Liberty Sentinel. Okay, Liberty Sentinel, one of my new great and wonderful sites that should get better known. Florida Rep. Fauci. Yeah, Florida Rep. Says, quote, Fauci should be in prison for the rest of his life. This is by Paul Simmons. 3 weeks ago, this article was written, but this is great. This is Vero Beach, Florida. Dr. Anthony Fauci, who we affectionately call Dr. Fascist around here, should spend the rest of his life, quote, rotting away in federal prison for his role in destroying America and trampling on the unalienable liberties of the American people. And that's a quote from Florida Representative Anthony Sabatini at a freedom rally organized in his honor. So there you go. So this is a great. Now, how come that didn't make national news? All right. And I'm kind of curious about that, right?
Of course not.
So the article says the firebrand Republican lawmaker, also called the U.S. National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, that'd be the NIAID, you know, the chief, that would be Dr. Fascist, quote, the most destructive person in American history. He must be listening to our show. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Anyway.
He might.
He says, Well, who knows? I got to talk to the article. I got to send some more stuff to the author of this article. They say Representative Sabatini, who is running for U.S. Congress, and we're going to support him because we're not journalists here. We're activists. Okay, so we want our country back. And if that part of that involves getting, you know, Representative Sabatini into Congress, which I think would be great. All right. So Sabatini, who is running for Congress, noted that he was very serious about the need to hold Fauci criminally accountable for the destruction the federal scientists unleashed on America under, quote, the guise of public health. Yeah, public health does not mean you can trample the Constitution, okay? Quote, some people think I say things like that for dramatic effects. And then he says he told hundreds of enthusiastic supporters at the Indian River County Freedom Rally. I don't. Anthony Fauci should literally spend every moment, every last moment of his life rotting away in a federal prison. I tend to agree. I think he's right on there. But before he does that, he needs to be grilled in front of the world on worldwide TV, and he needs to fess up. He needs to document everything he did, you know, and we need to find out. And I don't think he'll do that. But he may go to his grave with the secrets he knows, which is too bad, because there's going to be another Dr. Fascist to take his place, and that's going to be a problem. All right. Article says, among other concerns, Sabatini blasted mask mandates, lockdowns, shutting churches, closing schools, and many other policies implemented during COVID that he said were still unconstitutional. He says, by standing against the policies implemented in other states, Sabatini said Florida proved that individual liberty and personal responsibility are perfectly compatible with health and safety. And that's absolutely true. The problem, though, is that Governor DeSantis, I mean, people forget this. Initially, he was a lockdowner. Okay. He had the safer at home policy. He required people to stay at home. And of course, the first day of the stay at home policy, I went driving with my windows down, singing country music loudly out the window. Okay. I did. I had a great time too. I think I went to Crestview and back. You know, but the point is that I'm not going to stand for this kind of crap. And if everybody else had hopped on the roads, wound down their windows and sung country music loudly or whatever you want out your window and said, no, we're going to resist. And if all the businesses had stayed open, said, we're not closing. We don't care what you say. We're as essential as a government office, more essential, you know, because they work for us. So why was it the government offices are closed and the rest of them didn't? Okay, so that's the problem. Yeah. So he's right, but
he made a
people
mistake.
He
regrets it now, and I know it. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure he regrets it now, but it's going to haunt him for a while. And I understand that, and I believe in, you know, redemption and fessing up and saying, look, I really screwed up here. But what we really want to find out is why he screwed up. I want to talk to him if I can sometime and find out his thought process at the time, you know, who was talking to him. My guess is Dr. Fascist was talking to him directly, because Dr. Fascist said in a coronavirus task force briefing, he says, I talk to governors all the time.
Exactly.
And my question is why?
Yeah.
Why would an infectious disease person talk to governors all the time? The governors, I mean, it's okay if they call him for advice, but why is he says, I talk to them. In other words, I'm telling them stuff. And what is he telling them? Probably false information.
Yeah. You're right.
Because first of all, the guidelines, the governors don't have to do anything he says.
Mm-mm.
I mean, the CDC doesn't have any authority. The only thing authority the CDC has that I know of is if somebody comes into the country with a known disease, where they got the symptoms of a known, potentially, you know, contagious, nasty disease, that person can be held. Okay. And can be quarantined coming into the country. That's it. That's their only power. Other than that, they issue guidelines. And guidelines, as you know, are suggestions, not mandates. All right. But I find this article fascinating. We might even spend the rest of the time on this one because it's so good. So he says, by standing against policies implemented in other states, Sabatini said Florida proved that individual liberty and personal responsibility are perfectly compatible with health and safety. That is so important because people think that, you know, it's freedom or safety. That's not true. It's freedom and safety. In fact, your safety is really guaranteed by your freedom, okay? Because what is your greatest danger, COVID or the government? Jesse, what do you think? COVID or the government? What's a greater danger?
The government.
Exactly.
Because
they're trying
to run our life.
Yeah.
And
so the danger.
The people over this. Hey, you know, nobody died from the flu last year. Did you notice that?
What a surprise. In fact, the death rate didn't increase one bit. We had a worldwide pandemic, and our death rate stayed exactly the same. In fact, I think it even went down a little bit. How is that possible?
Yep.
How is it possible that 600,000 people died from COVID, and yet the mortality rate, the national mortality rate, stayed exactly the same? Wow.
Yep.
Because they cooked the books.
Amazing.
That's how. Okay. But here's the thing. So COVID, the virus, is nowhere near as dangerous as the lockdowns, the mask mandates, you know, and the resulting suicides, depressions, lost businesses, lost families, spousal abuse, you know, child abuse, and all the things that happen. So the consequences of what the government did were far more dangerous to this country and our economy and our health and our liberty and our laws and our constitution and our safety were far more dangerous to our safety than anything that the COVID-19 virus did. That's why freedom, that's why the Constitution is always the supreme law of the land. That's why the Bill of Rights is always the supreme law of the land. That's why no public health dictate, no bureaucrat, no doctor fascist can take away any of your constitutional rights regardless of the crisis. Okay. Now, smart people and responsible people, you know, will do the right thing. Okay. If they're sick, they're going to quarantine themselves. If not, you can actually quarantine somebody with a known disease because they have known symptoms. You can't quarantine healthy people. So this is why they changed the definition. They said, we don't know who's healthy because anybody could be carrying the disease. Better lock up everybody. Okay. You can't do that. All right. That's not, first of all, it's not rational. And that doesn't increase our safety. You're actually damaging our safety, you know, and making things worse because the stress lowered the immune system. And that's why people got this thing in their homes, stressed out. Go ahead.
And they don't care about all the illegals coming in to test them. They're just coming in and they were releasing them everywhere. So,
yeah. Well, the fallacy of the...
I mean, I know the virus is real. The virus is real, no doubt about it. But this whole pandemic that they planned it, it was all well organized.
Well, What did you think of our show yesterday connecting Obama to the Obama playbook given to Trump, which I really think was given to Dr. Fascist, so Dr. Fascist would carry on Obama's policies during the Trump administration and Trump would be pushed to the side? What do you think of that theory?
Well, when the whole thing comes out soon, we're going to know who's behind this whole thing, how many people, how many countries. Oh, yeah, we're going to know.
Yeah, but we have to start asking the questions. See, I don't have the power to investigate all this stuff, but I do have the ability to ask the questions.
But it's coming out, right?
And the thing is,
so many people are starting to die already and will be dying from the fake vaccines, guess who are they going to blame? Donald Trump for all the deaths coming up.
Yeah, because I guess they can say that, well, Warp Speed was your idea, and look at all these, you know, you brought about dangerous vaccines. Yeah. I don't know if they can say that because Dr. Fascist has been so, you know, pushing these things, and the World Health Organization has been pushing these things, and Europe has been pushing them, the European Union. And so all the people pushing these vaccines can't come back and all of a sudden say, well, you know, they're not working because of Donald Trump. That doesn't make much sense. I mean, there's a lot of stupid arguments they've made.
One of my nurse, RN, friends in one of the local hospitals here, she's being bullied in her unit because she's the only one that hasn't taken the vaccine. Mm-hmm. And she wrote me a thing a couple of days ago. She said, I'm being bullied. They say I should have the vaccine and I'm not going to. And they're trying to push it and push it that she should have it. She's not going to. And she really doesn't want to lose her job, but she's not going to. And a lot of Latino friends, including my stupid sister, like one of my friends from church, he said, I have to go to Panama and all that, and they're requiring the vaccine now. I said, is it worth it for you to just make a trip to go visit your family or your life? I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. Are you stupid or what?
I was looking for the article in the Texas case. In fact, let me see if I can find that. There's another one here that the people should know about, too. CDC acknowledges heart risk to young people, must discontinue COVID-19 vaccination in people under 30. And this is from America's Frontline Doctors. That's Dr. Simone Gold. Mm-hmm. That's Dr. Stella Emanuel. That's a bunch of folks. Yeah. Stella Emanuel. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So the article, Los Angeles, and this is from June 11th, America's Frontline Doctors released the following statement today in response to the announcement by the Centers for Disease Control that they will hold a June 18th emergency meeting at the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practice to address increased rates of inflammation of the heart muscle and heart lining after COVID-19 vaccination, particularly in young people. In a June 10th meeting, the CDC disclosed, as of May 31st, 475 cases of myocarditis, pericarditis, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing them correctly, were reported to VAERS, that's the Vaccine Reporting Service, of Americans age 30 and younger. The condition called myocarditis and pericarditis can cause permanent heart damage. You know, AFLDS is currently suing the department. That's America's Frontline Doctors. There we go. It's currently suing the Department of Health and Human Services to prevent additional emergency use authorizations of COVID-19 vaccines. Okay, the people you don't want to give it to are young people because they are the most immune to COVID. And here's the thing I don't understand. COVID's gone. The original COVID strain is gone. All these vaccines are made for the original COVID strain. The original COVID strain is gone. It's been replaced by 14 mutations. That's according to Peter McCullough, Dr. McCullough. All right. So so why are they forcing a vaccine, you know, on a virus that's already on a form of a virus that's already disappeared on young people who are already immune? That to
control
me
population.
Is. That's the only reason. That's the only. That's the disgusting reason. Let me see if I can find this other one. We also had a mask mandate over here.
There was some doctors gathered together. They were talking about this special chemical that they have been putting on all the vaccines for years and years and years to cause cancer. It's a special. I don't remember the name of the thing moment. But
you got to send me the stuff on that because I'd be curious about.
Yeah, I have it. I have the video. They're talking about they've been putting it in the flu vaccine to cause cancer in America because almost one out of five people in America have cancer. And they've been doing this for a long time to make America sick so they can go through cancer and more money in their pockets.
Here's the problem with cancer that, you know, cancer is a bunch of forms and a bunch of different things. I mean, I had skin cancer. I had a nice little chunk taken on my leg, you know, because of skin cancer. But different than the chemo, the folks that have serious cancer problems. My problem with cancer is that they spend an awful long time looking for the cure and they don't have a lot to show for it.
And they have it. They have it.
Yeah,
but
the treatment makes more money. And so this is, you know, if big pharma is just as bad about vaccine as they are about cancer, then that's a huge investigation we need to do. All right. Where do we get more listeners, more resources?
Can you invite Dr. Judy Mikovits and talk about the flu, what they put in it? Because there is a special chemical, and I'll send you the video.
Send me the video. I'm really careful about people that have been nice enough to come on the show that are really busy, like Dr. Judy Mikovits and Dr. Zelenko. I mean, I'd love to have them on the show. I'd have them on all the time. But let me think about it, just because I really respect these people. And if I when I ask them to come on, I usually have a very good reason for doing so. And so let me think about it. You never know. We might be able to do that. All right. Here's something I want to get to. This is from The Defender. This is Robert Francis Kennedy's group, Children's Health Defense. He says, judge dismisses, RFK, not JFK, RFK. So judge dismisses lawsuit brought by Texas healthcare workers forced to get COVID vaccine or lose jobs. And this is U.S. District Judge Lynn Hughes ruled that Texas law only protects employees from being fired if they are asked to commit an illegal act that carries criminal penalties. Getting a COVID vaccine, quote, is not an illegal act. That's how the judge made the ruling. Well, this is bogus, and I'll tell you why in a second. So here's the story. Federal judge, let me get the article and the quote, Children's Health Defense Team. So it's the whole team, and the date on this is June 14th, so 2 days ago. All right. So a federal judge in Texas on Saturday dismissed a lawsuit by healthcare workers who accused their employer of, quote, unlawfully forcing its employees to receive the COVID vaccine. What's significant about this is it's healthcare workers. It's very interesting that healthcare workers across the country are rejecting, you know, most times you don't hear about it because they don't make a big deal about it. If they don't want to get it, they don't get it. And the employer doesn't care. This employer does, and now it's coming out. So the article says Jennifer Bridges and 116 other plaintiffs said Houston Methodist Hospital is forcing employees to get COVID vaccines that are, quote, experimental and dangerous. You know, firing employees for refusing the vaccine is wrongful termination. Right. Hospitals last week suspended nearly 200 employees who refused the vaccine. U.S. District Judge Lynn Hughes ruled Texas law only protects employees from being fired, like we said, if they're asked to commit an illegal act. According to the judge's ruling, receiving a COVID-19 vaccination is not an illegal act, and it carries no criminal penalties. I would say that the act of forcing an experimental vaccine on people, that's not even a vaccine, that's an illegal act. Okay, so it's not that she says that, you know, she's got it backwards. The illegal act is forcing these employees to do that, to take something against their will. You know, that's the illegal act. The article says the plaintiffs argued requiring employees to get the COVID vaccine violates federal law because the vaccines have not received full approval by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, that's the FDA, and are still, quote, emergency use authorization products. Hughes dismissed that claim, that's the judge Hughes, saying the law authorizes the Secretary of Health and Human Services to roll out, quote, medical products intended for use in an emergency. That's not right either. I'll tell you why. Anyway, the judge said the law confers certain powers and responsibilities to the Secretary of Health and Human Services in an emergency. It neither expands nor restricts the responsibilities of private employers. In fact, it does not apply at all to private employers like the hospital in this case. It does not confer a private opportunity to sue the government, employer, or worker. Okay, so here's where she's got it wrong. What the judge is arguing is that the powers and responsibilities of the Secretary of Health and Human Services in an emergency override the Constitution and override constitutional rights. That's the flaw in her argument. That's where she screwed up, okay? The article says in his ruling, Hughes. I thought it was Lynn Hughes. Okay, so it's a guy. In his ruling, Hughes said claims that vaccines are dangerous are false and is also irrelevant. What? The fact that the vaccines are dangerous is irrelevant? What kind of idiot is this judge? Right. Anyway, the ruling means employees of the Texas hospital
judges,
must provide.
The judges are so corrupt, Greg. That's the problem that we have right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, here's Mary Holland, Children's Health Defense Council, President and General Counsel, said the decision is disappointing and there are grounds for an appeal. She says, I think the judge has misinterpreted federal law and does not fully understand the true implications of emergency use authorization status because EUA means the product is experimental. You can't be forced to take it. No employer can mandate the COVID vaccine while it remains under an emergency use authorization. I don't think they can mandate it anyway, you know. So there's a problem. So you either have the constitutional right of to be free from unreasonable seizures, which the Fourth Amendment says, if an employer or the government can force you to take any kind of vaccine, experimental or not, okay, that is a seizure of your body. That is a seizure. And unless there's a proper due process, and I don't know what the due process would be, they can't do it, okay? The only due process I can think of is a quarantine, okay, because you're a danger to the society because you've got a proven, you know, communicable dangerous disease. That they can do. Then they can deny your rights. But that doesn't change your body. See, the thing about a vaccine is it changes who you are. It changes your DNA. It changes your makeup. Okay, it changes you in a way that cannot be turned back. If you're quarantined for a while, you get back out again. Okay, so where these judges and where the law is making the mistake is that, you know, if you're forcing a vaccine, you're forcing a mandatory life change that cannot be countered. It can be countered, but it cannot be rescinded. You can't go back. Once you have a vaccine, you can't take it back. You can't be unvaccinated. Okay, so on those grounds alone, the judge has no basis to allow employers to force people to take something that forever changes who they are and cannot be undone. Since you cannot be unvaccinated, you know, the idea that you can be vaccinated is insane. We got a minute left. What do you think?
Yeah, it's true. Your body, your choice, and nobody's going to force me to get a vaccine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No one, because the CDC does not run my life. I have freedom of speech, and they don't control my choices of my health. And that's exactly what the government is trying to do, to police each individual to tell you what you need and what you don't need, and that doesn't cut it with me. No, it's not going to happen with me. And people are falling. They're stupid. And I think you're out of time almost.
20 seconds. But here's where, you know, the neo you know, the neo-Nazis, communists, and the folks that believe as Bert does, that under their totalitarian society, they would tell you, you have to have the vaccine, and if you don't, then you go to the re-education camp or you're shot. That's the difference between them and us, just to make that last point. All right. We'll do it again tomorrow. Thanks, Josie. Appreciate your help. Appreciate Bert calling, even if I disagree with him, which I do. It's always an interesting time.
Okay.
This is, yeah, it is okay. But, but I have to tell him where he's wrong. And that's where it gets fascinating. All right. Greg Pengles for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Back again tomorrow at 7 o'clock. If you want to help sponsor us, patreon.com/actionradio. And if you want to listen to us in your vehicle, just connect your cell phone to our browser, you know, at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Plug it into your car audio or Bluetooth it. And there we are. That's how it works. All right. See you again tomorrow.